This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2025, held at United Christian School in Napanee, Indiana, on February 28 and March 1, 2025.
This is the breakout where we're going to discuss discipline policies and discipline problems is, well, I guess that's one of the more frustrating things about school. Is that where the stress is, maybe? One of the things about policy is that, how do you find it? Does policy become the law in your school? Do you feel compelled by it? Or is policy the guide? And some policy is, it's easy to sit down around a table and create it and look at it and say, well, now that's well written. Can't wait to publish that. And then we find it very challenging to execute. And especially discipline policy. I imagine that probably all of us can tell stories of, we had this wonderful policy that was going to guide us through a sticky situation, only to find, yeah, that it was very challenging. We had to, one of the sayings we say in board meetings when it comes to this is, you know what, this is going to be a case-by-case basis. How many times have you said that to yourselves over the years? Which is okay. But policy, you know, right now I'm in the middle of a situation that's kind of difficult. Trying to talk with some dads, and I am really glad to have a guide to guide me through that. Something that's written down. Something that even when I am talking to the teacher about this frustration after school, and she's looking at me with pleading eyes, right? Like, do something. And I go back to my books, I've got this written down. What is the next thing I should be doing? And I have it. Because in stressful moments, all that stuff that's kind of floating around up there just kind of evaporates away when the stress comes on. So let's talk about policy here for a little bit. I have in your handout a little guide for our discussion and then a sample discipline policy. This is just one that we use at our school, and there are people who have made better policies probably. Maybe you have one you'd like to share. There's all kinds of policies that people have made. This is one that we use. You can use it as an example. We'll maybe talk about it later. I think that this discussion should probably begin with a discussion about communication. And sometimes when we talk about authority and institutions and all of that, we talk about chain of command. Or chain of authority. And that's a good word, but does chain of authority, does that put in mind somebody's at the top and then everything's kind of underneath, kind of like when we talk about headship order or something, there's top, next, next, next. Does it work that way at school? I don't know what you think, but I use a triangle shape to help wrap my head around how around the policy that directs communication. Now you could say it's a communication policy or an authority, a structure of authority. But we have these boxes here, and they're in a triangle because these two at the bottom, I'm not sure, I think they're more on equal plane. That's why I write them like that. There's this circle in the center, and we'll just call that any given student. And there is this communication that happens around a student that actually creates a tremendous amount of security for the student. Okay? One of the things that benefits a child more than anything is when all the authorities in his life are communicating well. Right? When that child can see that everybody is in step, moving in the same direction, provides a lot of blessing for the child. So we'll put the administration up here. There is an institution in place, and they need to have some. They've been tasked with the responsibility, and so if you're going to give them the responsibility, then they must obviously have authority, right? But these two down here will put more on an equal plane, teacher and parent. A wise parent will understand that they are turning their child over for the day to a teacher, and so they're giving the teacher responsibility. She must have her own authority to do that. All right, so this sets up three sort of authorities in a student's life, and now they're going to communicate with each other. So there is a problem. A parent is upset at something the teacher did, or maybe the student came home and convinced their mom that the teacher's being whatever, okay? So what is the temptation? The temptation is for the parent to do this. Come up here to the administrator and say, "It just ain't going right down there in room 3. And I don't know if you know what's going on or not, but we got issues down there." Okay? And then what's my temptation? It took me a long time to learn this. I'm ashamed at how long it took me to learn this. But when I hang up from a phone call like that, my first feeling is, oh boy, I need to go down there and rescue that teacher. I need to go down there and make sure she knows that I'm on her side or his side, right? And so I go running down here and I say, boy, we got a problem. What's going on? Well, I got parents calling me, what's happening? And right away, a teacher, she might feel that I'm on her side, but that's bad. Because right away now, she or he knows that there was a conversation that happened behind their back. And that does not feel good to anybody. Not even if you are a really good Christian, it still doesn't feel good, right? And the second thing that it's going to do is it's going to make her feel insecure. And the parent, when they were talking to you, feels more emboldened because they're getting their feelings out on the table and they're kind of really talking about it. And by the time they finish talking to you, it's become a bigger issue than what it really should be. Okay? So now you go down and you make an even bigger issue by walking in and saying, whoa, what's going on, man? We got a big problem. Okay? Now, conversation has broken down this way. That's not happening. From now on, teacher's going to talk to you, and you're going to have to run to the parent, and the parent's going to have to talk to you, and you got this three-way thing going on. And that's not good. And so there needs to be this. Of course, that's perfect. It'd be nice if that would always work. So when you get a call, or a teacher comes after school, and I've got problems, the first, well, you know, Matthew 18 was right after all. The first thing to say is, have you talked? And if the parent says, well, and they kind of make excuses, and you kind of tell, no, you didn't. And then you can just say, look, I will be glad to help however I can, but you be sure to take that up with the teacher first. And when the parent takes this up with the teacher first, they are together. And you know what's so amazing about that? Here's what's so amazing about that. The problem just right away shrinks. It is not as big a problem now. When you talk third party and ignore the most direct kind of communication, problems just grow exponentially. And that's ridiculous. It would not have to be. Okay, now, unfortunately, sometimes there's breakdowns and then a third party needs to get involved. So the principle there in that little diagram is that first of all, students feel a tremendous amount of security when the most direct communication is happening. And he can sense a teacher and parent like each other and can talk with each other and things like that. And second of all, communication always begins as direct as possible. Not around the circle. And thirdly, then the third party gets involved as support, because when things do get difficult, sometimes you need a mediator. And that's what that's for. So a three, well, they tell me the triangle is the strongest shape. I'm not an engineer, but that's supposed to be the way that is. So keep that in mind. Now let's just stop for a minute. Any comments about that as a beginning discussion of discipline and communication? Anything else you want to add to that or say?
What about parents texting teachers directly? Is there anything wrong with that? Does that create problems?
Oh, what a day we live in. Okay, texting, parents texting teachers after school. Any comment about that?
A lot easier to lash out in text than it is face-to-face. Face-to-face, you get feelings, you get emotions. It's more personal.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Something else?
I think text should be only for very basic instructions or following up on. Maybe this is the lesson we did today. This is what I want them to do at home.
Okay.
I don't think discipline issues should be addressed by text.
Yes. So I have had parents already say, after we've met, we'd like to hear every day after school how it went. There's nothing wrong with that. Send them a voice message. You can do voice messages nowadays. Send those. That's at least your voice. Except my daughter's teaching with me this year, and a dad called me and said, "Your daughter's so shy, I can't even hear her voice messages." Well, that is pretty bad. Anyway, so you have that. Voice messaging, we do it. We just do. You do in your business, and we do at school. But you're right. There are some precautions to take there. If you've left the issue go too long, and now suddenly you have a bad deal, that's not the time to be texting, probably. And so we encourage a direct call to talk. And yeah, a wise teacher has been communicating, and the parent is not surprised when things are difficult because it's already been happening.
So if the parent comes to you and you tell them you would prefer if they spoke to the teacher, if they don't speak to the teacher, does that mean the problem went away?
Yeah.
Or what do you do in that situation?
The problem went away. No, unfortunately it didn't. Yeah. Okay, so what's an administrator's role? What's the board's role in that situation?
Matthew 18.
I'm sorry?
Matthew 18.
Okay. Now it's your job to go back to the parent. Did you get this done? How's it going? I mean, I wouldn't be demanding about it, I would just ask. You know, how did that conversation go that you had? Well, did they have it? Any other comments about that?
When you tell a parent to go back to the teacher, do you at that same time ask them to report back to you?
Well, almost always a teacher comes running then, kind of, you know. Not always, sometimes. But usually I try hard to keep it the two-way. Like, I'm communicating this way, they're communicating. So I keep talking to the parent, and then eventually ask the teacher in maybe a staff meeting, how's that going? Has conversation been going well? But try hard not to make a big deal about this conversation that happened behind their back. Yeah. Okay, yes. Did you have your hand raised?
One of the things that we stress this in our parent orientation. There's a new parent, this is talked about. Stress very hard on the line of communication that they will ask first, you know, if they have talked to the, and you know, if they have and they're not being responsible, gladly talk to us, you know, or they share. But yeah, we do this, stress this at the orientation.
Yeah, right from the beginning, right from new family coming on board. That's a good policy. All right, let's move on to some other things, or we are gonna run out of time. All right, some enrollment policies. This would be some more things maybe that are right up front, that are maybe sort of overarching. I just pulled out two just to go over some things here. The first one there is a statement which says, the school administration shall have full discretion in the discipline of my child. Is it right for a school to insist on that in 2025? Is anyone starting to feel queasy about such a straight out statement that sounds so cold? You want to know something interesting? I suspect that Gladys up here is probably going to do some talk about gentle parenting. I don't know, but I didn't realize until recently that that gentle parenting lady, her name is Sarah Ockwell Smith. I don't know much about her, but I listened to a talk from her. And she was having this talk and she was saying about how she has all these moms that are all, they're upset at what the school is doing to their children. And she, this Sarah Ockwell Smith of all people, in a public speech said, you moms need to understand that a school is a school, and a school has to have rules, and you can't do gentle parenting at school. Okay, amen. So that came from her. That's probably a fairly, you know, we would say, I hope, well, I better just be quiet. I don't know what you all think about that, but anyway, I found that interesting. So even she recognizes that a school, you're giving them responsibility, you're giving them accountability, so you must give them the authority to do that. Any comment about that little overarching statement? Maybe it looks cold. It does not necessarily mean, or a mom should not look at that and think, oh dear, they're gonna kick my child. It's not what that says. It just means that when they're at school, you assume responsibility for the behavior of that child. And a parent should actually want that. That should make the parents feel more secure. They don't want the place just, you know, running loose.
I think one thing is that, that doesn't mean that there's gonna be a major discipline thing happening. I had no idea about it.
Exactly.
We can communicate it, but we're not really asking. We're just saying this is gonna happen.
Mm-hmm. Something's gonna happen.
But it's not that, this just came out of the blue. I had no idea. I came home with.
Right.
Said it got whatever.
The way we make sure that that is clearly understood is we have a page will sign the document that states it, and it's kept in the file.
There you go. Oh boy, you can pull that out at very, the right opportunity, right? Okay, second one. Any student who persistently disregards school standards or whose presence in school is considered harmful to the aim and purpose of the school shall be under the discipline of the school administration. We got that harmful word in there. Two of the biggest buzzwords in our culture are the words safe and harm. Used over and over and over, right? You hear them all the time. At least you do in the education world. Yep, so working a buzzword or two, I guess that helps. All right, what does that say? What it says to me is that I, as an administrator, cannot just let a teacher stick with a difficult problem. I have to get down there, we gotta get working on it. We can't just, she's down there day in, day out, struggling away, and no one's dealing with this problem or bringing it to a head. And sometimes problems have to be brought to a head. Oh man, I could tell stories till we're out of time, but I remember one time struggling with a terrible issue with a boy-girl relationship where finally we almost set up a situation where the thing would come to a head. I don't know if you ever did anything crazy like that in your school or not. But we just couldn't keep going like we were. So You know, you finally have to deal with something.
Make a comment on the statements here. One of the things that I have found to be effective in dealing with a difficult student who's maybe bringing down the school culture a little bit, maybe has a negative attitude towards education, is to call them out of it, as opposed to coming down on them with consequences or discipline. So this, the second statement there, what does it mean to be under the discipline of the school administration? What does that statement mean? Does that mean the school administration is getting involved, or that there is going to be consequences, or what is that?
Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe that's something not quite clear there, but that means that the school has the authority and they will take charge of the situation.
So you're just using this as kind of like the school has the authority.
The school must feel responsible. The administration must feel responsible to get involved and deal with this. All right, well, let's look at a discipline plan for a little bit. This, of course, is just an example, and I guess, you know, I'd be open to any suggestions for how to improve it. But I will tell you that school administrators do a lot of borrowing and stealing from each other, and this is a combination of a lot of people's stuff, right? And you might find something that I stole from you on here. And I'm pretty sure a great big hunk of that section E came straight off of Gerald Miller, probably. And yeah. So this is not something that is laminated and put away for all time and eternity. It is something that is changing and developing, and we continually work on it. But this is something that This is something that both the teachers and the parents and the administrators all have in their possession. Everyone can see this. And they see the process that we're supposed to be following. So this discipline plan provides, and I have just a few blanks there you can fill in under the discipline plan example. It provides a planned response, because in these kind of issues, there will be some kind of response, and it might as well be a planned response. Aren't those the best responses when you've at least thought through, right? Okay, so this provides a planned response. Another thing that this does is when there's not clear direction for how you're going to work through something, do you know what teachers do? They ignore problems. They just don't know exactly what to do, and so they just pretend it's not happening. But if you give them a path to follow and a way to work through something, then, and I think that's my second point there, builds confidence in problem solving, is my second blank there under that section. So there's a little more confidence. In fact, this is usually my starting point. If a teacher is struggling with a situation in her room, and she's like, we're just struggling away. And I'll say, how does this help us? Well, my first question is going to be, what are your procedures and how are your procedures working out? Of course, this isn't a breakout session on the importance of procedures, but we could have one on that for sure sometime. And then the second question will be, well, how is the discipline plan guiding you through that? And we might get this out and talk about how is she working with, or he, working with limit-setting acts, which that's a beautiful little section there. If you don't know what limit-setting acts are, that's the teacher's first response to a little thing that's going wrong in the classroom. So if these two guys over here are acting up, whispering and going on, while I'm trying to explain the lesson, I can just teach the lesson from right here. That might be all it takes, but obviously not. So then we'll just have to come over here and write their names on the board and never break momentum. Like, don't let your teachers break momentum dealing with a little bit of disturbance. A little limit setting act is usually enough. Eye contact, proximity, name on the board, and never break momentum. And if they like, well, just tell them, look, you can explain this situation, at recess. Let's keep moving. That's what limit-setting acts are about. So I've written down a few of them just so teachers, those are five of my favorite. They're, you know, nothing far out. It's very simple, but it's very effective. And the name on the board means, you know what, we'll deal with that later. And then the student can explain himself if he feels like he needs to explain something, and you can deal with it later, but the class is not disrupted. All right, so those are, that's what Section D is about. Negative consequences is when, you know, you have to do something to kind of take care of behavior that's less than desirable. Old innocent until proven guilty. That's helped us a lot. I think we have the Romans to thank for that. I don't know what you all think of that, but anyway, it's worked. Worked quite effectively. And what else should I say about Section E? Somewhere down here it says, yes, and under point three, the teacher reserves the right to deviate from the plan. Okay, so this has been published. The parents know. Maybe even the students got a hold of this and read it. But look, this is a guide. It's not the Medes and Persians, okay? It's a guide. And if the teacher feels like he has the opportunity to work within that. And as much as possible, it's worded so that the parents feel like their schedules are respected, as in that big section there about having to serve an after-school detention or something like that. On the back page is just a step-by-step process as things get more difficult. And it's also divided into, I found the teachers really like this. They like the whole behavior thing broken down into categories. So this is a list of categories. The first category is issues that come about because of work or academics. They're not getting their work done. They can't keep after their homework and things like that. And so, you know, you're allowed a penalty for number one, and as you get down about number three, you might have to stay after school to get your work caught up. And down around number five, this is a problem so bad that we might get the school board involved. All right, so in other words, again, we're not just gonna let the teacher stick, but we're gonna try to deal with it. The middle column has more to do with just virtue habit training. Can you sit still? Can you stay quiet? Can you not talk to your neighbor? The little misdemeanors in a given day. And it's a guide that works better for younger students. And of course, that also has a step-by-step process that eventually leads to something fairly serious, like maybe the student being sent home from school. And then the third one is, that has that word redemptive in it, which is a fascinating word. We always use it because it sounds so right. And yet, when you're dealing with a fourth grade boy, are you gonna do child evangelism, or what are you gonna do there? What's redemptive mean at the fourth grade level? I've wondered about that already. Probably it comes because we so often associate the word redemptive with Jesus hanging on the cross and salvation. But redemptive does have other definitions. And that's probably what we mean here. So this is more the attitudes, the high school issues, and such like. And I'm not sure we do this perfectly. So it's an example. You take it, you improve on it. Anything you want to discuss about this? I went over it fast. We're down to about 10 minutes. Any questions that you want to, that you have about this? It's overwhelming, I know. It's a information overload.
So is it something that you'll have as a discipline program for your school? When your teacher comes, you hire a new teacher, this is what they can expect to see as part of the discipline plan?
In a teacher interview, they get this. Yeah.
So this would be in your teacher's handbook?
It is, yeah. It's in our teacher's handbook.
Okay.
on the redemptive discipline, the second one, I just noticed that it says the student will review at noon recess the learner's commitment. Is that something that
Okay, that's hidden information. I didn't give you that.
That's
a fancy word. Those are two fancy words that basically means the rules. We call it the learner's commitment, so that it makes it look like it's their responsibility and not me just... I'm trying to be philosophical, what the world. Anyway, so the learner's commitment is, back in your day, they called that the rules.
I'm just curious, on these disciplines, they usually the being dismissed or staying after school or being detained at home or whatever is kind of the highest level. Does that have an effect? Maybe we haven't used that much. I guess at our school we haven't used suspension very often unless a student was needed, I mean suspended, but there was often other discipline in here. But is the, yeah, has this been effective as far as student staying after school for an hour? Is that usually the problem?
Okay, what do you think?
Well, probably for some. I think they probably
All right.
much about it.
Just in case I run out of time, let's make sure that we get this quote here under the challenging 10%. I'm not ignoring your question. We're leading into that, okay? All right, so there's always the 10%. The toughest year, the year that I thought was just about going to do me in, I had three boys that just, there were reasons why they were the way they were, but they just about kicked me off the scene. And as I look back on it, I realize that was still only 10% of my students. But boy, it felt like 110, right? All right, so you always have that. And no discipline plan is going to, you know, take care of the challenging 10%. They are just a special case. But this still is good to have, even for them and for their parents, although they might not read it. Because the 10%, usually there's a reason why, yeah. All right, so that quote is from Elizabeth Elliot. And this is something I remind myself of. Well, there is, in fact, no redemptive work done anywhere without suffering. It's the way it was for Jesus, and that's the way it'll be for you. And so sometimes these issues must be borne long. Back to the question now that we have that. You know what? I wish I could say that we've had a lot of success with after-school detentions. Whenever it is a work-related issue, like they're falling behind, you can almost always put that like this. You can call mom or dad and say, you know, Johnny is falling behind. It's really getting bad. We'd like to help him get caught up. Can he stay after school? Frame it like that, they don't even feel like it's a detention. It's like, whew, a relief. They can go home actually feeling good about themselves. Okay, so those are those work. The attitude, we've done it. We probably should have done it more than we have, I don't know, to be true to our policy. But they haven't always worked. We've expelled, we've expelled, we've suspended. That has not always fixed the problem. That's just a given. I wish, you know, and I think here in my notes I have somewhere, our school has been in existence. This is our 60th year that our school has been in existence. And we have a little display of pictures in our school, of photographs of student body through the years. And you know what's sad about looking at all that? This little 10% that we tried to help float the mercy ship, you know. Almost none of them are where they should be today. And are we supposed to feel bad? I hardly know how I'm supposed to feel about that. But I have determined that the home trumps all. And so you do what you can. Okay, yes.
Is there a point with having a detention or something like that may not be, we'll use the word redemptive for that student, but it is helpful for the rest of the class to show that this is trying to be dealt with?
I think that's how we feel a lot of times. So are you being redemptive to the rest of the class?
That was my question. I
And yet, so I agree to that. And a certain part of me agrees with that. But there is this thing that has blessed me, is when you have that little character that just is not cooperating, it is surprising what percent of the student body seems to understand that the school has a special case on their hands there and tend to be gracious with it. Like, I have worried over much already. Oh boy, if I don't do this, I'm gonna look inconsistent, and oh man, I'm gonna... And you know what? Most of the student body, one year we dealt with a girl, and you know what? There was a boy that was getting wrapped up in that, and when it was all over, he came to me and just sighed in relief. He was so glad that, you know, we took care of him. Yeah. Well, I'd like to spend a few minutes looking at this current, we could have a whole nother session on current trends in discipline. I don't know what you would say has changed in your community since you went to school. How many of you, when you went to school, they still spanked? Okay, now, do you still want to raise your hand if your school still spanks? Hey, look at you brave people go. All right, how long are you going to keep going?
Till we're angels.
Till you're angels. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, we've been tested on that. Some states are starting to put policies in place now where that's illegal for private schools. That's the way Maryland is, where I'm from. And that was a Christian school teacher that went to Annapolis, Maryland, in front of the government. And she had fond memories of what she was supposed to do in a Christian day school. And when her husband took that before the legislature in Maryland, they all looked at each other and said, "You mean there's schools that still do this?" And they're like, "For crying out loud, yes, let's pass a policy." So, yeah, of course, that's illegal now. But here's what's interesting. I want you to look at the bottom of this paper. You see this breakdown? I think most of us were raised under retributive justice. Big words here, I know. All right, so we promote punishment. We focus on the actions of the offender. Zero tolerance policy. By the way, this retributive justice is actually something that public schools used extensively after Columbine. And suddenly parents wanted stuff to happen, right? Okay, discipline through detention, suspension, and expulsion. That's not happening so much anymore. And you know what's interesting? 20 years ago, they quit spanking because they found in their careful research that that led students to a life of crime. You know what they're saying now? That detention, suspension, and expulsion leads to a life of crime. That's no joke. You can read that on their ideas about discipline in public schools. And so they've moved away from that. And they are now, and that makes me think about, so we're starting to, you know, starting to wonder what to do about this spanking thing in some of our schools. How long is it going to be till we start feeling ouchy about detentions? Oh boy, we might hurt somebody. You know, where are we going with all this? And then, of course, the middle one there is, let's fix the guy. We got to get him fixed. Let's take him to some counseling. Let's get him some behavior management, some anger management, sessions, and we'll fix it. Well, you have been reading in the news very much about how society just can't fix people. If you're gay, you're gay. If you want to be a cat, you just be a cat. You can't fix the guy anymore. So now we're at level 3. where we are going, I couldn't teach in a public school. These teachers are quitting left and right. You've been reading about this, right? It's getting harder and harder to exist in these environments. How do you suppose they even make this third one work? Restorative justice. We're going to make the offender own the problem. Yeah, I can hardly imagine. It sounds good on paper. It sounds like we finally got there. We've arrived. We're gonna do this right. We're gonna sit him down in a circle, the offender and the victim, and we're gonna have them talk. Anyway, teachers are highly frustrated with that. Can you imagine getting a victim and an offender together, and we're gonna talk this through? What do you think is gonna happen? And we don't have time to discuss it. Maybe you can discuss it among yourselves. But it wouldn't surprise me that we have yet another reaction and end up somewhere back here. But I don't know. We'll see. Any last minute thoughts before we close?
I think part of the idea that retributive justice can't be done with love. And I think as Christian schools, we have to be like the picture of what that's like. It's tough, but it's 100% done in love.
Yes, I agree with you. But why do I have to say but? What you felt was done in love can so many times be interpreted as,
sure.
Well, you've had those experiences, sure. Right? So I wish I could tell you there's a solution for everything, but what I can tell you is a discipline policy at least helps guide you through the difficult process. Lord bless you all.